This is The Bottom Line on Rhode Island Public Radio. I'm Dave Fallon, and along with co-host Providence Business News editor Mark Murphy. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Dave.
We look at the proposed new state budget as it relates to economic development for Rhode Island. Our guest is University of Rhode Island professor Dr. Tony Wheeler. He's published extensively on the workforce and is in charge of URI's new Strategic Innovation MBA program in Providence. Tony, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What stands out in the new budget relating to economic development in your eyes?
In my eyes, it's really not so much what's in the budget as maybe what may not be in the budget. There were some potential opportunities, I think, for the governor to do some things with the budget, or the legislature to do some things in the budget to maybe stimulate new economic development with maybe new businesses, new small businesses, more innovative entrepreneurial type businesses starting up in the state. So when I look at the budget from a whole, I struggle in many ways to see how this is going to stimulate a lot of economic development in the state.
What are some of those things you would have liked to have been in the budget?
I know the state is a little bit gun-shy, especially after the 38 Studios debacle, which I think we might discuss in a little bit. But I think maybe the state might be a little leery, potentially, of doing things directly to try to stimulate economic development, especially in a budget. But there are things, for instance, that other states might do to incentivize new businesses to found here in the state, maybe such things as capital gains cuts for new businesses once they sell, if these businesses are looking for exit strategies to try to get new businesses here, the idea to grow them, broaden the employment base, and then have these smaller businesses maybe sell to larger companies but keep the employment base intact, while rewarding the innovators who are starting up. So New Hampshire, for example, has a program like this that they've enacted probably more than a decade ago that's been fairly successful. I tend to not see that kind of policy being enacted here in the state.
Now, one of the things that happened is the job guarantee program, which is what where the 38 Studios loan guarantees came out of, was eliminated from the budget. And it had about 40-some-odd million dollars left in authorized loan guarantees. Is that good? Is that bad? Is it, you know, just an inevitable, you know, byproduct of the political process?
I think it might be a byproduct. The thing I found interesting about that program, and especially how it was enacted with 38 Studios, is when you incentivize a company, if you say to a company, look, we're just going to keep giving you money, we're going to open up more loan options for you simply by hitting employment metrics, you get situations like you get with 38 Studios where you're just going to hire people just for the sake of hiring them. So you're not actually creating something solid and durable. You're creating an environment where you have excess. And I think a lot of people in the state coming on the heels of what happened with 38 Studios are leery, maybe rightfully so, or it could be an issue of maybe being a little more targeted, a little more careful about how those types of opportunities are given out to potential investors.
Now, another thing that came up in the budget is Rhode Island is going to match the federal government right now in terms of depreciation of capital investment. Is that a good idea?
This is interesting, too. You know, I was reading up on some issues related to, you know, capital investment and tax cuts. I think that type of program can help. Has it helped in the past? I think that's open for debate. So maybe it's an issue of needing more data to figure out if a policy like that is working. Although normally when you look at a lot of these issues, the empirical findings are always very muddy. We don't really know for decades sometimes as to whether or not these things are working. There's a lot of evidence coming out of the 2003 national tax cut bills that were passed about whether or not cuts in dividends, corporate tax rates actually led to reinvestment or growth. And a more recent study came out from some economists in the University of California, Berkeley, suggesting that those cuts did not increase reinvestment for companies in their workforce in communities. So the net effect may not be as big as we think, although it's an empirical question. We don't know.
So what happened in that study? What did happen to the money that wasn't going to the federal coffers?
It appears that a lot of those types of programs increase wages or what economists might call labor. And what they mean by that is not labor in a union type sense, but in wages, personal income, growth, wealth. So in one sense, you're increasing people's wealth. A lot of it tends to be targeted towards the higher levels inside of a company because they're getting bonuses and they're getting stock options. But it does seem to improve wages across the board, but it's not improving. It's not adding jobs. It's not increasing the tax base in that way. So it's increasing wealth on one hand, but not increasing the tax base.
Mm-hmm.
This is The Bottom Line on Rhode Island Public Radio, and our guest is University of Rhode Island Professor Dr. Tony Wheeler. The budget calls for payment of the initial debt installment of $2.5 million for the 38 Studios bond debt, and there was a lot of back and forth about that, about our reputation, the ability to borrow at a good borrowing rate. Is the business and financial world really watching this closely?
I think yes. And in my opinion, I think failing to repay that obligation would hurt this state in the short term and long term. Long term, of course, higher borrowing costs to finance projects, to finance growth. But in the short term, what this state, in my opinion, does not need is another round of press discussing, describing the business environment, the business climate here, which tends to be rated fairly lowly when you look at national ratings of ease of business, of cost of business. So in my opinion, I think it's essential that the state commits to paying back its debts.
There is a revival of historic tax credits, but with some restrictions and also an apprenticeship requirement. Is this a positive for development?
Well, I know there's been a debate, especially about the apprenticeship component of that. You know, the historical tax credits, you know, you see something like what's happening with Brown, URI, and Rhode Island College potentially using some of those credits to enter their partnership to lease the power building here in town to create a downtown center for that. That, I think, will help economic development. I'm not so sure about the other requirements. Again, it's an unknown.
Now, one of the things that actually caused a little bit of consternation at the General Assembly was a little piece in the early version of the budget that said we're not going to send that $13 million or so surplus that we have to the state workers' pension fund as was required by previous legislation, and we're just not going to make that payment. And so, you know, there was an uproar, and it did actually in the final version come back in with cuts and other things. What do you think that would have said to the world about what Rhode Island is up to? Because the state garnered a lot of praise, especially in financial circles, for that, you know, the Gina Raimondo-led pension reform.
Much like repaying the debt for 38 Studios, I think it's absolutely essential. And in my opinion, the biggest ticking time bomb in this state has been the pension. And I'm not sure if we've really addressed the healthcare-related costs to the pension crisis, but that's a national crisis that is building. But here in Rhode Island, we actually were on the forefront of addressing this problem. In my opinion, to have skipped that nearly $13 million payment would have sent, again, a terrible signal. And I do believe there were, you know, bond rating issues that were at stake there in terms of how Rhode Island's, you know, credit would have been rated by some of the rating agencies. So I, again, think that a state has committed, has obligations to pay back their debts. I think it's absolutely essential that they make that payment just to send a signal that we are a creditworthy, we are a trustworthy place to do business.
And these are debts, you know, a lot of the other debts are to bondholders. These are debts to workers, right? So it's a different, it's an obligation, but it's not, you know, to Wall Street. It's to the people in Rhode Island.
True. That is true. And, you know, there's always, I've read some quotes, you know, I've read some of the discussion that has gone back and forth about this with whether or not the state is obligated to pay it. What inevitably, in my opinion, ends up happening is that if something as big as a pension fund, where it is being paid out to primary recipients, not bondholders, someone will eventually end up having to pay. And in one way or another, we're going to pay.
And we'll have to leave our look at the state budget right here, and our thanks to URI Professor Dr. Tony Wheeler.
Thank you.
And Mark Murphy, Providence Business News, as always, thanks to you.
Great to be here, Dave.
This has been The Bottom Line on Rhode Island Public Radio, Rhode Island's NPR.